Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
Yeah, we haven't moved from our little Zoom spaces here.
that's exactly right. You know, every once in a while, I think I should change the decor here. I think I actually put in a report on one of the lesser known reports on Central Square. There's also one on Cambridgeport revitalization.
Yeah, you have them all. Yeah.
Actually one that'll actually be pretty relevant today. It's the Green Ribbon Open Space Report.
When was that done?
2020. It's March of 2000.
Oh my gosh, it's
that's 20 years old.
Ago.
Yeah, wow. But I was on the Green Ribbon Open Space Committee and you know, kind of poured a lot of my heart and soul into that process. So I feel a level of ownership of that. Like, you know, I want to defend the Green Ribbon ideas and what, you know, the goals.
How would you sum up the Green Ribbon ideas?
It was, there were multiple things worth saying. It was pretty comprehensive, but the one thing was, is that there was a belief and understanding that there was a need for additional playing fields this around the city sort of soccer around that time. People are already forgetting it, but Lusitania Field was on the Fresh Pond Reservation, was a very popular soccer spot. Where, but it was never meant to be permanent.
Oh, right, near Neville Manor.
Right. And it was only put there because they had taken away other site elsewhere for a lay down area during the Red Line extension. They were eventually supposed to return Lusitania Field back to the wild, and they did a great job when they did it.
It's very
beautiful and very functional too in terms of water quality.
I've been to soccer games there.
Right, but it also meant that a very significant and popular soccer field went away. So, you know, we were certainly sort of on the hunt to try and find.
Wait a minute. What do you mean it went away? Fields. There is one there.
Not on Fresh Pond Reservation anymore.
Neville Manor behind that. I went to a game there 2 years ago.
No, I'm talking about the one that you could actually look right at the front of the pond from it. Right.
Okay, I don't know that one. There's one right across from Neville Manor. It's a parking lot. You go in right off of Concord and it's on the right.
The point is, it's not Lusitania. Now it's the meadow again. It's Lusitania Meadow.
Well, fine, but there is still a soccer field on Fresh.
But that was part of our charge with the Green Ribbon open space. It was all just to identify playing fields and open space, but it was also somewhat neighborhood specific in the realization, and there was a lot of analysis done to say which parts of the city are underserved in terms of access to open space.
Yeah.
And certainly, yes, it can be fairly said that the western part of the city had a little bit more than its share.
Yeah.
And East Cambridge and mid Cambridge, where I live, had very little open space. So, you know, certainly no playing fields. Once upon a time, what became Joan Lorenz Park, some people wanted to turn it into playing fields. There was opposition to doing that. So it's
can I remind you that the high school never had a football field? Come on.
Well, they play up at Danny Park.
Now?
Yeah.
No, but they didn't before that. Russell Field was a newer.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
That's right. So the thing is, you might have to go to, that was actually also part of our charge was to talk about developing mechanisms and means of getting access to these fields, even from other neighborhoods as well.
Right.
For example, the Grand Junction Path.
Yes.
Which, you know, again, I'm not going to say that I was the first one to say it absolutely, but the thing is, I was one of the people with the Green Ribbon one who were promoting that as a potential future mechanism for getting people from East Cambridge over to Magazine Beach and the playing fields there. You know, so it was a way of actually creating a connection for the purpose of access to open space assets. That was a piece of that. You know, there were also some other really kind of interesting creative ideas that have been floated about, pedestrian and bike ways adjacent to the rails, that go out toward Fresh Pond as well. So those are not completely off the table.
You know, East Cambridge now has areas around North Point. It has the skate park there. It has.
Yep.
It has the Charles River. I mean, people keep forgetting what a gift we have with having Charles River come the length of Cambridge, at least.
yeah,
where I live, you know.
I mean,
you're kind of landlocked where you are, but
right. But the thing is that there was some open space that came around the time when the Foundry Building was coming, and the Foundry Building itself is sort of an asset for people of East Cambridge.
Yeah,
as
but
well.
That's very
it's citywide, but it. Yeah, but the thing is there's another park that now, is it Roger Street? I think it's named Timothy Toomey Park, right?
That's true. There's a, right? I walk around there a lot.
I mean, yeah, so I mean, it's better than it was 20 years ago, you know, right. But there are still some underserved parts of the city, including my own neighborhood.
Yeah, right? I think the middle of Cambridge is probably, you have the Library Park, but other than that,
which is just a passive open space.
Yeah.
You know, so you can't go, you know, hit a softball out or something.
No, right? I agree. So you
yeah. So these are things that need to be addressed. So one of the things that happened at the December 21st city council meeting was that there was a friendly eminent domain taking.
Oh, right.
Negotiated with the people from, is that BBN?
BBN? BBN, yeah, Buckingham Browns.
Yeah, so they were giving up a space which is currently basically a softball diamond field. Mm-hmm. That's technically the address, they put it at Larch Road, but it's really along Fresh Pond Parkway.
I know, but you get there from Larch Road. It's very difficult to get there.
That's right. That's right. But it's right across from where the water treatment plant
is. Right.
You know, but it'd be a nice additional asset. And it was. For those of us who were part of, the Green Ribbon Open Space Committee 20 some years ago, there was something a little bit disturbing that the moment that the city is acquiring for, and again, I can't justify the $18.5 million price tag, but the thing is as we're acquiring it, the current rhetoric, it was immediately saying, how fast can we start building on it?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, come on. I mean,
well, first of all, they can't. For 3 years, it has to be maintained as a field for BBN.
Right, exactly. But the thing is that there are places in Central Square that could use greater infill for housing and other places as well. And I sort of wish, would hope that they would at least be looking toward other places for building on rather than immediately... Yeah. Building on.
Yeah, I personally don't think it's a great location. I know that the argument is, well, they don't have enough of affordable housing, but you know, they have the Finch just got built right around.
Well, you know, the thing is the western parts of the city also include some of the northwestern parts of the city, which is Ridge Towers. So the notion that somehow
Jackson Place, a lot of places
that all the low income or subsidized housing is all concentrated in the eastern part of the city is fiction. No.
It just isn't in Brattle Square. That's what the problem is.
Right,
it's not,
right.
It's not right in the Tory Road. That's what people want. And I just think that's unrealistic. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. But so anyway, so that was kind of a strange twist. And, for me at least, sort of concerning that somehow the priorities of not that long ago really are just to be completely sacrificed and, because of whatever the current priorities happen to be. I think, you have to think a little bit longer term here, once you build on open space, it's gone. It ain't coming back,
And that's not that close to public transportation either.
No, it's not.
And the parking would be,
Now, another thing that actually happened at the December 21st city council meeting, which was may or may not be related to an eminent domain taking in the past, don't know, was a kind of, it was left as a mystery. Executive session, and then emerged from executive session. Nobody knows. I have no idea what the executive session was about.
And we will never find out.
We shouldn't. Nobody should. But in the past, those who were friendly with certain counselors would always need to find out, and then the rumors would spread. So for me, I was only left to speculate. And to me, I do know that one of the largest outstanding kind of potential legal settlements that had not yet been made and maybe has not yet been made had to do with the eminent domain taking and Vail Court property at the intersection of Temple and Bishop Allen.
What a shame. How long has it been now? Crazy.
Well, that property has been decades vacant.
And then
for the last several years, the land was cleared of the decrepit buildings that were on there. Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't want to be too harsh about this, but the truth of the matter is that when you've got whatever number of units of housing was located there, and there were from the family that owned those properties previously, the rather dysfunctional family, let's face it, very dysfunctional yeah. family, where they couldn't work it out amongst different factions of their family about what they wanted to do. But they actually went for historical commission elsewhere and actually had plans that were really? Given kind of thumbs up about oh. doing a kind of a mixed
what income happened?
Development in there. The family just never could settle on it, and it just and it just sat there, and the property just yeah. fell further into disrepair.
Yeah.
And then eventually, in a somewhat politicized atmosphere, the city yeah. took the property.
Yeah.
You know, but I remember speaking with people, you know, high up in the city, that there's been such an opportunity. Maybe there's still a possibility here, but if you look at it, you know, Central Square, we're all trying to this to be a really vital place. And there are a couple places that are just terrible. One is Vail Court. It's just an yeah. empty lot now. But yeah. right next door to Vail Court is the single most underutilized park surface parking lot in the city. You know, it's associated with the tall buildings.
It's not right here. Next to it. Aren't there apartments in between?
No, they are absolutely really? Adjacent.
Okay.
They're absolutely adjacent. The only thing separating them are some ailanthus trees that have weed.
All right, I have to look back in there. I didn't think it was that whole corner.
They're right next to each other.
All right.
And, you know, if we really, really had the wherewithal.
Yeah, take that all.
We should have been able to negotiate yeah. kind of something with the property yeah. owners for the large buildings that are, you know, facing over onto Prospect Street. Because that parking is required under zoning to be sort of auxiliary parking for
well,
that.
What about the one across the street from it? That's also
same
a
ownership,
lot.
But same ownership. So
it's never
is,
that filled. It's
so,
never
yeah,
that filled.
So if you could crazy. Maybe double stack parking in one of those things there, release some of the other ones here, do some sort of mix of housing, commercial, and other
don't
development.
Don't you think that there must be some problem then with the ownership there not wanting to do that with the city? Because it seems to me they would have looked into that.
They actually had a proposal for oh. that large Prospect Street yeah. lot. Anthony Gallucci was one who was sort of
yeah.
the lead lawyer for it for a while. Yeah. And then I think they met just a little bit of either opposition or controversy, so they just backed off.
Oh, that's too
so
bad.
In other words, if there yeah. was a willingness to do something there.
Such a great space to do it on both.
And,
I mean,
and
all
if
of
you
it.
Could think yeah. about it, if you can yeah. actually make a connection there, so it was yeah. a pass through, you could, you know, you yeah. could actually have activity where there was a mix yeah. of housing and things, using great. the whole space in there, you know, connecting with the Temple Street.
Yeah,
it would just, you know, we could do such good things.
And I like the fact mixed income, not just 100% affordable.
Well, you
mixed
know,
income and no retail. We have enough retail spaces everywhere that are empty.
I think what would have been good is to have something along the Prospect Street frontage.
Yes.
And there, by the way, there used to be three right at the corner. It's long gone, right? But yeah. there used to be three. I think one maybe was a fish store or whatever. But there were
really?
Three of them right there at the corner.
Which you side? As you're going from
on the Whole Foods side of Prospect
the Whole
Street,
Foods side. Okay.
Right at the corner where the parking lot is.
Okay. Yeah.
So the thing is, there is a history of there being some
right.
retail there. And
right. But yeah, I'm just saying, don't this model of retail on the bottom and housing. No, I'd like to see more mixed income.
It's not for everywhere.
We're
right.
Not, but, we're not building mixed income as much anymore.
Right. But I think we could do something interesting there. You
yeah.
know, and I just, you know, we have like a poverty of ideas sometimes in this
yeah.
city about thinking creatively and making really interesting things happen here.
Yeah.
You know. You know, or, you know, honestly, we could even make a recreational assets tied into that. And maybe that would be the site for my miniature golf course.
Well, again, it's right. got to be on the rooftop. A rooftop.
Well, we can do that too. Yeah, yeah.
I
or
like
between
that.
The buildings, you know.
No, it takes up too much space on the ground.
Right.
Sorry.
But yeah. by the way, so just to be clear, that the executive session the council went into,
yeah.
they emerged from executive session with a proposal, a late order for a $1.4 million appropriation for purposes unspecified.
Well, there's the word legal in there.
It was to the legal to the law department, you know,
right.
for whatever the appropriate budget was. For making a settlement. So again, I personally feel that the city's what they paid lowballed a little bit for what the property
yeah.
was worth for Vail Court. So right. maybe this will settle the matter.
I
don't know.
So.
And then the only, if that is the case, I hope that the city can actually talk to the owners of the next door property and see if they can do kind of a grand bargain, you know, something where they can do something kind of in concert, for the greater good of the greater Central Square area. I think that would just be a great, great thing.
I mean, because as much as people don't want to say it, you will have to have some parking for a development like that.
I like to believe that, but you know, there are still some people who want to eternally wish away all parking.
I know, but you're talking about families. How many families are going to give? I mean, people have cars, they have cable television. I mean, let's get real here, people. They're not all living, you know, to get those electric cars. I mean, that would be great, but that's not going to.
It would be great, but the thing is that, you know, in my personally, my future vision is that, you know, we put a lot of effort into things like bicycle infrastructure and all that's well and good. But the truth is that if the day
comes.
You've
got two kids going to the daycare and everything, and you're rushing around, you're not getting on a bike with them. There's definitely Cambridge people that do that, but those aren't the people that we keep saying we need affordable housing.
I mean, if the day comes, I know you cringe at the thought of autonomous vehicles, and I'm not a big fan either.
No.
I'm not a big fan, but if you have either those or if you just have greater access
to electric
vehicles,
people are going to want them.
And if the prices are reasonable so that you can't make a case that these are not environmentally friendly choices, then, you know, the bicycling population, people will feel because it's good and healthy to bicycle. But as a practical matter, I think you will not see a forever increasing graph of cyclists. What you will see is a lot more practical decisions being made for people for vehicles.
It depends on how many families continue to live here.
If the world or the country or the city can perfect a good kind of car sharing model that a lot of people buy in to, including maybe me. I mean, right now I may be giving up my 40-year-old Volkswagen bus soon. You know, if somebody wants it, give me a call, you know, in which case maybe I'll be joining the ranks of the car sharing world. I don't know yet. But the thing is that when that world comes, motor vehicles, even if they're electric motor vehicles, and even if they're shared, are going to have to be still part of that.
They have to be parked somewhere. Yeah.
Right. Unless we can simultaneously provide every possible retail and consumer needs for every neighborhood within their own neighborhood, so they don't actually have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Or if we miraculously provided, you know, recreational facilities all right in their nearby neighborhood, but physically that's not happening.
Right. But again, younger people without kids, even just couples, they don't always have cars, or they get them when they need them. They do Lyft and Uber. I mean, it's a whole different generational thing.
Yeah.
And, but families, once you have a family,
it's just
convenient to have a vehicle.
That's exactly right.
It'd be great if it could be electric. If they put more electrical state, you know, I think people would do it more. It's getting more affordable, but it's still out of reach for some people.
Yeah. But the notion that somehow, you know, having places for cars to be in the vicinity of new housing to some degree it's okay, you know, sort of like if you have a previously built up part of Central Square and you want to do it because it's right there in the heart, you wave it there but further away, even a few blocks away, it starts to become very,
and especially if there's some more space where you could actually do that.
Yes, absolutely. And speaking of space, I'm not personally horrified by the outcome, but at the December 21st City Council meeting, there was yet another call for keeping Riverbend Park open,
year round,
whatever. And the DCR came back, and as Louis DePasquale, our city manager, explained, we have a very good working relationship with DCR, but they said, look, there's just no way we can do this right now. Mm-hmm. So, which then of course led to city councilors.
Oh yeah. Why can't we be our own people do it? No, I don't think it can do that.
Well, you know, it's funny how in a number of ways, I'm always reminded of an old Saturday Night Live bit where General Schwartz said, I can't give you specific details about this Iraqi invasion here. And then the reporters continued to ask for specific details on where all the troops were, no matter what. They didn't hear a word. So the manager explains, look, we have a very good working relationship with DCR.
You want to keep it that way.
Several city councilors, it's almost like went right through them.
I know. It's like, why can't they do that? And what, they're already out there. They're only closing it and putting it up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not true, because I saw them actually taking the cones away at 4 o'clock on one of the weekends. And it was like five people. There was a truck going slowly. Maybe it's overtime on weekends.
One idea I've certainly helped promote this idea is that during the part of the year when Riverbend Park is open on for Sundays, we could do it Saturdays and Sundays, but rather than opening the road at the end of Saturday and then closing it again on Sunday morning, they could just close it on Saturday morning and leave it closed straight through Sunday night. So that's half the labor.
No, but were you aware that it was closed from Christmas 24th through the 28th?
Yes.
That was phenomenal. That was like, I think Thursday was a little early. The traffic was unbelievable because people didn't expect that. The holiday. So that I liked. However, they're doing all this work on the bridge, on the Western Avenue Bridge. The traffic going down Western Ave is horrendous at certain times because there's only a single lane on the bridge. So, and things are only going to get, you know, more with the plans. So,
and it's not like the city is adding lanes to local roads to pick up the slack. If anything, we are restricting local roads in the name of traffic calming. So,
so I think if we can get the Saturday and Sunday with that idea that you keep it closed, which is an inconvenience for a lot of people.
That's right. That's right.
So, I like that. Or even if they can't keep it closed, just to have both days.
I was a bit bewildered, and I believe you were too, Councillor Nolan, continuing to go on about closing the rest of Memorial Drive all along here. You know, and I'm thinking, you know, I think we do still need some roads to get access to the Massachusetts Turnpike.
And that's crazy.
And you cannot wish that away.
Plus, I know a lot of East Cambridge people were complaining at one of the public, we can't get to the to get to the river. And I walk there all the time. Yeah, you have to cross maybe two lanes, but you have the river down there. You have all along by the Science Museum.
Honestly, if I was living in East Cambridge, I would be taking walks down by the Museum of Science, going through
the locks there. I just did
The new park.
You can go to Charlestown. You can walk
going over that, that really cool pedestrian bridge, walking all the way down to Spalding at the end of
But I do want to say something in defense of the people that want everything closed, because I realized this a few weeks ago, that there is something nice about walking in a space where you don't see, we don't hear cars.
I agree.
And even though Memorial Drive, and I feel like it's open, you can be on the banks, you can be on the wide sidewalks, especially in sometimes it's not that busy, but to not have cars, it's not that I need the space, but it's nice not to have the cars.
Right. So in other words, and I think this needs to be emphasized, because people were using COVID as sort of the justification for social distancing. And I thought that's ridiculous.
You can walk by somebody without getting.
I think the case that it would be a good thing to keep Riverbend Park open at other times. You don't have to justify it based on a public health need.
Right. And also because it has to be closed, period. This shared streets idea where you're dodging bicyclists and cars. I'm not walking in one of those streets. I'm sorry.
I think we've mentioned this before, but how
did you feel about Harvard? Because you're near there.
I think there were Harvard Street. I always felt it didn't have to be the barricades were ridiculous. I think there were ways in which you could have sent a signal to go slower. Yeah. And I've always felt that Harvard Street could be a very good bike thoroughfare, like, in other words, so to whatever degree we have buses and cars and things on Broadway, because I live on Broadway, we could popularize a parallel street as a pretty
probably in the works. I could see that happening.
I think that would be a kind of a good alternative as opposed to further, making Broadway. I mean, the truth of the matter is, when I would take the bus, they would, people would be parking and maybe do some loading down at the brewery. Right. There's a brewery place along Broadway, Lamplighter.
Oh, yeah.
And if they start blocking off lanes and throwing in those posts and stuff on Broadway, they're going to really just you're going to just shut the city down, honestly.
I know.
But the thing is that you can actually accommodate bicycles very well for Harvard Street.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I think that would just be a good alternative. But, you know, it's political. But speaking of politics, one kind of, I don't know if I'm going to call it comical. I think it was actually kind of sad in a way.
Yeah.
Was I think it was at the December 21st meeting. There was a proposal from Councillor Toomey to, as a congratulatory resolution to outgoing Speaker of the House, Rob DeLeo.
Oh, yeah, that caused a little bit of
Then immediately was sort of like, well, he didn't support Cambridge values. So it ended up with only three councillors saying congratulations. Three going flat out, no, I'm opposed to congratulating this man. And three just, you know, just weaseling out and voting present.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought that's a pretty sad thing to do. I mean, you can make your statement and say, well, we didn't agree with you. Good luck here. But
That's a good point.
Yeah.
It was a pretty
You don't have to be bitter. You don't have to be silly like they were, you know, but, you know, I don't know, very political.
So what do we want to do in our last minute?
Our last minute. Well, first off, let's congratulate our incoming executive director of Cambridge Television, Jessica Spicer.
Yes.
Right?
Who Welcome,
I believe
Jessica.
Started just this
we
week.
We haven't met.
Let's Josh also congratulate. But let's also congratulate outgoing executive director Susan Fleischman, who's been on the job a great long time.
It was
actually, I only found out through her who her predecessor was. Erwin Hipsman.
Oh, I knew Erwin.
Back in 2003. Well, I knew the name, but I had forgotten it because
he had come from the Somerville place. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, our producer, Seth Meyer, congratulations on his new baby. And Sean FL, who is also leaving CCTV, who's just
has left. Absolutely. 31st.
Has left. Right. Wonderful, wonderful, great person, resource for CCTV. So, anyway, on that note, I guess we've got
5 seconds. We'll just say goodbye. We'll see you.
See you soon again on Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye.